I have urged you all along to get information to me if you think I need it, and I especially do that tonight. We have two or three that are pretty sick, and anything can happen at any time. And I will try to keep in touch with all the families, but if you were to see something or think I need to come to a hospital here, pick up the phone and call me, and I will do my very best to go and to be there. I can only act on information that I know. My plans are, I'll be gone a portion of Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, and after that, I do not have any plans to be out of town. During the Christmas season, I will be where you can get in touch with me. You have my cell phone, or if you don't, get it from me tonight. And if something were to happen and you're aware of it, call me and let me know. I'd rather two or three of you would call me than none. It doesn't bother me for you to call, but I appreciate that. I have three more lessons, including the one tonight, in our series centered around Moses. I'm going to be concentrating on the last chapter of Deuteronomy tonight, Deuteronomy 34. We're going to be talking about the death of Moses. Next Sunday night, I plan to speak about the mother of Moses. And then the last Sunday night of the year, it's going to be sort of a summary lesson, and it will fit into the time, I think. We're going to have a lesson on what made Moses tick. It'll be sort of a summary lesson about what was involved in making Moses the man that he was, and it will help us to maybe think about ending a year and starting another. I want to read this chapter tonight as we begin our study. Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah, that is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan, and all Naphtali, and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah unto the utmost sea. And the south, and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, This is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he, God, buried him in a valley in the land of Moab over against Beth Peor. But no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. And Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him and the children. The children of Israel hearkened unto him, and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. And all the signs and the wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh, and to all his servants, and to all his land. And in all that mighty hand, and all the great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. As I've said many times in this series, I'm convinced that Moses was one of the most outstanding men that ever lived. And this is the last that we have said about Moses in history, though many references are made back to him later in the Bible. I had the opportunity in 1985 to take a trip to the Bible lands, and the first part of it was spent in the country of Jordan, which is on one side of the Jordan River, away from where Israel is and Jerusalem is on the other side. The last day that we were in Jordan, we went up to Mount Nebo, that's described here, the top of Pisgah, and no doubt were in the vicinity of where these events took place. As said here, no one knows where the sepulcher of Moses was. There is a building up on the top of that mountain where there are things that remind us of what happened with Moses, but there is no specific place that is designated as the place of his burial. That's different from many of the other characters. For example, I visited David's tomb, and it is designated as a place where they believe David was buried. I visited the place where they believe Jesus was born. I visited the place where they believe he was buried, at least one of the places. There are two places that have notoriety now, one in a building and one in a garden tomb. And we don't know for sure where Jesus was buried, but there are places that recognize that, but there's no place that recognizes the sepulcher of Moses because we don't know where it was. We know the general vicinity. As I stood there that morning, I was able to look across the Jordan River in the area of Jericho, as he talks about here, and see part of the land that became the promised land that the children of Israel would eventually be able to inhabit. And I'm sure that what Moses saw was not exactly like that, but something like that. When God said, I'll let you look over and see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. Because of that opportunity to be there in that place, in that general area where Moses was buried, where God told him his life was over and God buried him, was a very interesting moment, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to do that and other events that were associated with that trip. But I want us to think about the death of Moses tonight. And let me say this at this point. It is important for us to be able to talk about death as well as to talk about life. We sometimes don't do that as easily. Death is just as much a part of God's plan as life. In fact, the Bible says that the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. And there is something about death that is better than birth, in that at the point of death, we know the kind of life that has been lived. At the point of birth, all we can do is anticipate the kind of life that will be lived. Death needs to be put in proper focus. Now, I don't mean to suggest by that we should take away grief. I don't think we should. We should not try to take away from death the difficulties that are associated with it. And there is no criticism from me to anyone when there is weeping and when there is a feeling of grief and when there is heartache. That's a part of human nature. That's a part of God's plan too. But death needs to be understood and faced and accepted for what it is. And I think the study of the death of Moses can perhaps help us. Moses was a man who had life and death in proper focus. The 90th Psalm is a prayer of Moses. Now, David wrote most of the Psalms, but Moses wrote, this is a prayer of Moses recorded in the 90th Psalm. And I suspect that there is none, or at least very few passages in the Bible that I have used more as a funeral text than this psalm. In the first part of it, he emphasizes that God is from everlasting to everlasting. And then along in verses 4, 5, and 6, he talks about how life is like a watch in the night. It's like a flood that comes and goes. It's like a sleep. You go to sleep and then it's over. It's like grass which groweth up in the morning, it flourisheth, verse 6, in the evening it withers. And then he comes down to verse 10 and makes the statement that most of you remember, the days of our years are 80 years, and if by reason of strength 80 years, 70 or 80 years. And then back in the verse before that, he makes the statement that I think is the center of the chapter when he says, we spend our years as a tale that is told. In other words, each one of us writes a story. And then after having said all of that, he comes to verse 12 and notice what he says. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. I don't know that there is a better outline that I can find in the Bible that puts life and death in proper focus than this 90th Psalm, and it is a prayer of Moses. He understood that life was frail, that it was short. He understood that God was in charge. He understood that each one makes a record as he is living and leaves that record, and especially leaves it in the hands of God. He understood that life for every person is timed. Though it may be shorter for some and longer for others, when he said the 70 years and the 80 years, he was emphasizing that there is a time relative to life. Exactly what he had in mind with that 70 and 80, I'm not for sure because he lived 120. But he was aware that there was a time when men lived over 900 years. And then later on, it began to be cut down. And from this time on, very few lived longer than that amount of time, at least longer than the amount of time that he did. Now, we've gone down through the years as we've studied history, and then in the lifetime of us, we've seen things change and go back. I visited Thursday with a lady who became 100 yesterday. I couldn't be with them for the party yesterday, and so I went and visited with her. She's a very close friend of mine, an unusual lady. Was able to get up and open the door for me and is active around her own house, lives by herself still at 100 years old, mind just as sharp as it can be. She's taught many people the truth, an unusual lady, and she reached 100 yesterday. I mentioned to you a few weeks ago that I had a distant relative that passed away in Cookeville within the last 2 months or so that was 107. And so we have seen things swing back up to where the lifespan is more now than it was at one point. But whatever figure you mention, that emphasizes to us that life is time. And I think Moses understood that when he was writing this, when he had this prayer that's recorded in Psalms 90 and was able to put life and death in proper focus. I think it is important for each of us. I don't know that there's anything that's more important for me personally than to put life and death in proper focus. And I've had an opportunity to do that more than anybody else that's here. I've conducted 672 funerals. That included the funeral of all four of my grandparents. It included the funeral of my dad and my mother. And it included the funeral of my mother-in-law. I've conducted all of their funerals. And I even spoke for a short time at my wife's funeral. And let me just say this in passing on that. I did that for two reasons. One, I wanted to be able to thank everybody. And I wanted to be able to prove to myself that I could control my emotions to conduct a funeral. Because it wasn't but a few days after Judy passed away that I was called to conduct a funeral. And I wanted to know before I accepted that I would be able to control my emotions. I don't apologize for my emotions, but I have to control them, and sometimes it's more difficult than others, in order to be able to do the service that is needed at a funeral service. And I think with the experiences that I've had down through life, that I probably have been able to put life in focus, life and death in focus, better than most of you have. And I'm not suggesting that I've arrived at 100%, but I am at least aware of the need of doing that. To give you an idea of my own personal feelings, I've told my children that if somebody calls you and tells you that they have found me dead in my bed, don't grieve. Because if I had the choice when I leave this earth of how I go, that would be my choice. And I pray to God regularly that, and I have no idea, none of us has any idea of what's ahead, but I pray that he'll let me live as long as I can be useful, and when it comes time that he can't use me anymore, that he'll do basically like he did with Moses. If I could have my way, and it may be just the opposite of that, and whatever God decides, I've got to learn to accept that and deal with it. But folks, it's important for us to put life and death in focus. I'm going to tell you something. When you do that, it will affect every phase of your life. It will affect how you look at people. It will affect how you treat people. It will affect how you worship God. It will affect your attitude toward being involved in the work of the church. And I think Moses had life and death in proper focus. The second lesson I want us to notice from this passage is that there is a time when God's going to be through with us. In my earlier years of life, I was pretty sure that things couldn't be controlled unless I was there. In fact, the first few times that I left my local work to go for a gospel meeting, I was just sure by the time I got back they'd be in serious trouble since I wasn't there to see that everything was done right. But I have learned, and here again, not 100%, but I have learned that things go on without me. Somebody said, if you want to know how really important you are, stick your finger in a glass of water and pull it out, and the hole that's left is how important you are. And I've come to realize that in many ways that's true. But there's going to come a time when God won't need me anymore, and he won't need you anymore on this earth. There's going to come a time when he's through with us. And if we have the right relationship to him, we ought to realize that. I think Jesus realized that in his prayer when he said in verse 4 of John 17, I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. He realized there is a finishing of the work. Paul said, I'm in a strait betwixt the two, Philippians 1, it'd be better for me to die and go on and be with Christ. And when I think about especially having lost my wife, I sometimes think in terms, you know, in some ways it'd be better if I could go on. But Paul said, there's still some things that I need to do. And there's still some things I'd like to do. I hope that God feels that there is a need for that. And when Paul came to the end of his life, he said, I have fought a good fight. I've finished the course. I've kept the faith. Even as important and outstanding as Paul was, there came a point in God's sight when Paul had finished what he needed to do. And we need to understand that there comes a time when God's going to be through with us. Moses had a long, full life. Verse 7 says he lived 120 years. That 120 years can be divided into three periods of 40. He lived 40 years in Egypt. He lived 40 years in Midian. He lived 40 years in the wilderness and the events that led up to that. He was experienced in the things of this world in Egypt. He was experienced in the quietness of the country of Midian as God prepared him to be the leader, and he was experienced in being a leader of perhaps 3 million people, 3.5 million, as he led them through that 40 years. He had had a full life, and even though he wanted to do more, you remember he came back to God after God had told him he couldn't go into the land of Israel and begged God to change his mind. He wanted to go over into Israel, into the promised land, but God wouldn't let him. He had had a full life. And some of us will die at earlier age than others, but if we can have a full life, I think Jesus had a full life and he died at 33. I've known of people who did more in 20 years of life than others did in 80. But Moses had a full life, and you and I need to live in such a way to make our lives full and complete so that when God decides he doesn't need us anymore, that we're ready to leave the right kind of legacy and especially leave with the right kind of relationship with God. Notice Moses at the time of his death in this chapter. His eyes were not abated. He still was able to think, evidently, just as clearly as he had been. His natural force, he had his natural forces that he'd used through life. His mind was clear, and his attitude seemingly was good. Even in the face of wanting to go on over into the land, the Bible describes him as the meekest man that ever lived. Moses had had a complete life, and at the time of his death, he was such a fellow, such an example, as a man of God, having done the work that God wanted him to do. And then notice in verse 6 that God buried him. God buried his physical body, and at the same time, he took his soul to be with him. His family was not there. There was not another man, another human present. We don't know the place. And I want to make a point here that I think is very, very important. We allow ourselves to become too tied to the physical, to where we sometimes overlook the spiritual. I have a little bit of concern about my sister. She has gone to my mother's grave almost every day since mother died 3 years ago. It's 25 miles away from where she lives. I go by the cemetery every chance that I get, but my mother is not in that cemetery. I go to my wife's grave every opportunity that I get. But when I left the cemetery the day that Judy's body was buried, I left knowing that I was not leaving her in that cemetery. Her soul is going back to be with God, and her influence and memories continue to be with me. It's one of the reasons I'm thankful I still live in the same house that we lived in for 22 years. I can't go through a room, I can't turn my head in any direction, but that there's something there that reminds me of the life that we had together. And there is a sense, at least I believe there is, in which she is still with me. Not physically, but she is not in the cemetery in Jackson County at Gainsborough, Tennessee. That's her body. There's a tombstone there that's in her memory. And when she was in the hospital, every time that she asked me to read the Bible, she asked me to read Psalm 23 and 1 Corinthians 13. And I've made it a habit or a practice every time that I go back to the cemetery to sit and read those two chapters. And yet I realize fully that she is not in that grave there, that that's her body. We've got to put that in focus. I don't know how many times I have stood by the casket with a family on the night before the funeral, especially if I can do it when there's nobody else there, and tell them, I want to talk to you for just a minute, and I will remind them that this is not the person. We sometimes say that when we close the lid, that's the last time. No, that's not the last time. That's not the real person. And I've had many people tell me down through the years that that has helped them as much as anything that I've been able to do. And I continue to practice that, especially when there is a great deal of grief. I will take the time to stand there by the casket and try to help them to put into perspective the relationship of the body and the soul. And I think Moses' situation helps us to see that as much as any. There was not another person there. There was not one of his family there. Just Moses and God. Sometimes I'll have parents say, well, I just cannot stand the thought of my children going on a mission trip and being across the ocean somewhere else. And I'll say it's just as close to heaven from there as it is from Henderson, Tennessee. One of my closest friends died in Scotland on a mission trip. Reader Oldham and his wife June went on a mission trip, and June died while she was there. One of the closest friends that I've ever had was Reader and June Oldham. Two doors up from me is a lady who's in her 90s. And she gets out in her yard and rakes her leaves when she can just barely stand up. And her son said something to me one day. He said, I just wish I could keep her from getting out there. And I said, Don, it's just as close to heaven from that yard as it is from the room inside. And if she dies in the yard, she'll die doing something she likes to do. Now, I've been a little bit personal tonight, but I think it's important for us to be able to think about these things and put them in proper focus. The important thing, folks, is to be right with God. And if you and I go to bed tonight and for some reason we were not to awaken in the morning, if things are as they think they are, there is a strong possibility that Brother Butler will not be alive next Sunday. They may be wrong in their conclusions. They'll know more tomorrow. But the doctor has said probably 5 days or less, if it's what he thinks it is. And if someone were to come in and tell you or me that I've got a close friend who's the head librarian at Fried Hardeman that was told a few weeks ago that she probably would not live more than 3 or 4 months. If you didn't know that, you couldn't tell a bit of difference. She's still running every morning. She's gone on a trip with her husband. She's still doing everything, and she's got enough foresight that she's asked her children to come to her house, and she's walked them through the house and told them things that she wants them to know. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody that's put life and death in focus better than she has. And if things don't change within 3 or 4 months, her life is going to be over. But she's got it in focus. We are just traveling through. You know some of the songs that we sing? I wonder if we really believe that. We're just traveling through. And I think we need to be like Moses was and put life and death in proper focus. I don't think of this lesson tonight as being morbid. I think of it as being factual. And I don't use and say these things to discourage us in life. But let me close with this idea. You're not ready to live until you're ready to die. And if you have your life so that if something were to happen before you get home tonight, you're ready, then you can get up tomorrow and live tomorrow to the fullest extent. Enjoy it. I think you know that I can enjoy life about as much as anybody. And I laugh about as much as anybody. But you've got to get life and death in proper focus before you can do that. I hope you will think about these things and take them in the spirit that I've delivered them tonight. And if there is anything in your life that keeps you from being ready, if God were to call you between now and the time the next day starts, if it starts, then come and make things right as we get to stand and sing.